Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Noons is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo. With me today is Dan Lyons.
Hello, everyone. Happy game week.
Happy game week. It is the longest offseason in sports, and yet it actually went by fairly quickly. I feel like the perpetual hell that we're in on a daily basis really helps the time go by, Dan. And I feel like this offseason went by as quick as a flash.
Yeah, I mean, we bring it up a decent amount. Like, there seemed to be an increased number of storylines and just things that take over the offseason. So, hope everyone's ready.
I know I am. I've got everything I could possibly need for a fall bunkered down here in the living room. I know that my dog James has his jersey ready to go. I've got all the SU gear I could need and all the beer I could need. And yeah, for those listening, we're going to get to the game against Central Connecticut State in the second half of the podcast. We're going to talk some other SU matters in the first half. Figure this will be the only week that we're really kind of not 100% focused on the game coming up, just because it is Central Connecticut. Not to get ahead of ourselves, but Dan, I don't know about you. I feel pretty confident here. Far more confident than I did even before the Villanova game, and we all know how that ended out. I'm again, without getting into the specifics, this is the most confident I felt going into a season, and at least for the first game, in quite a while.
Yeah, I mean, even like when we had Villanova or Stony Brook or Maine or some of those other teams, yeah, we had a tendency of scheduling pretty good FCS teams. This is not one of them. Central Connecticut was 2-9 last year. They were 1-5 in the brutal NEC. They're not, you know, it's just not a strong, it's not a team that's enough to contend for a playoff spot in all likelihood this year. Obviously, I don't pretend to be an expert on the Central Connecticut Blue Devils, despite being
Central Connecticut,
despite being a Central Connecticut legacy, and a Central Connecticut football legacy, actually.
Yeah.
My dad played quarterback there back in the 70s, 60s, huh. 60s. But yeah, not a team that I have any real fears about. I think this will probably get away from them pretty quick.
Agreed. So yeah, I guess jumping into non-Central Connecticut matters, first and foremost, Torian Thompson left, and a lot of people are pretty pissed off about that. I understand why, but I also think that these things happen, and SU has a penchant for stupid things happening in recent seasons. Things have turned out all right for Syracuse basketball, things considered. As much as it would have been probably great for him to have handled it differently, I'm not going to sit here and rake the kid over the coals no matter what happened. I think that if Seton Hall's a better fit, it's a better fit. Jim Boeheim's been through this quite a few times. I feel like he's going to figure out a solution here.
Yeah, and I have to imagine that Jim Boeheim didn't find out about this on Monday or Tuesday, whenever that was. It's frustrating in that we were kind of blindsided by it. I guess there were rumors out there, and I'm sure if you were on like message boards or whatever, which I am less and less, you were probably more privy to it than the rest of us. But again, like you said, I'm not going to blame anyone for trying to do what they feel is best for their future. Whether or not, you know, us as Syracuse fans think it's the best for his future, it's largely irrelevant. You know, I'm pretty sure we all think, oh, Torian was burgeoning as probably one of the two or three best players on the team next year and was going to have a huge role, and that's fine. I don't think Torian Thompson was unaware of that, or whomever else was part of this decision was unaware of that, but they determined that Seton Hall was the best fit, assuming that's where he does end up. I don't think that's official yet.
Yeah, not official, but I think enough people.
I mean, everything's pointing there, and they happen to have a scholarship open up like the same day, which is, you know, fun.
Surprise!
Yeah, who knew this would happen? I imagine this was in the works for a bit. Again, this is like, I guess, one of the situations where having someone like Jim Boeheim is probably good, because he's, you know, pretty unflappable generally about these types of things, and he didn't seem super stunned with that release he put out. So, best of luck to him. It's disappointing. It makes me feel a lot worse about the season, to be honest, but like you said, I don't find it appropriate to judge some, you know, an 18 or 19 year old for his college decisions, because that's just gross. So we'll see what happens. We have a luckily we have some months of football ahead of us before we have to worry about the realities of maybe facing a third straight or a second straight NCAA tournament-less season.
Yeah, I'm not excited about that prospect, but, you know, like, fans also, like, fans, us included, you know, need to look at, you know, remember, like, going into last year, like, Tyler Lydon put up modest numbers, but numbers that we thought would translate to bigger numbers as a sophomore. We kind of extrapolated out. We expected huge things. He was probably our best player, but nonetheless, he didn't necessarily, you know, light the world on fire in the way that we thought. And that, coupled with, you know, multiple other factors, were why we didn't make the NCAA tournament. Torian Thompson put up even lesser numbers than Tyler Lydon. Thompson was more efficient offensively. Defensively, he was far worse than Lydon. And we actually thought Lydon was a fairly competent defensive player in the zone. I know that there were the things we were joking about around the NBA draft, that he was some terrible defensive player suddenly. But yeah, I think that Thompson likely would have made the strides necessary with more minutes and another year under his belt, but to just expect that he was suddenly going to become, you know, a second leading scorer and a guy that went from scoring about 9 points a game in 17 minutes to someone who could, you know, score 15 to 17 and double that. It's not to say it's far-fetched, but it's also to say that, like, there are no guarantees there. These are still, you know, kids in their late teens, early 20s. A lot can happen. And again, if you're on Jim Boeheim's team, you're not going to play defense. Other than that stretch from, like, 04 to 08, like, I don't really know how you're going to survive, you know, in the Syracuse basketball program. I don't wish any ill will on Torian. Again, wish it handled differently, but not going to begrudge somebody for making the decision that's right for them and right for their life and their family and all that. Syracuse, as a result, though, is going to lean on some freshmen this year, probably a little bit more than they thought. I think Matt Moyer was a guy that a lot of us thought would kind of come in off the bench, be a bit of a six-man. Now I think him, O'Shea Brissett in particular, I think the two of them at the forward spot, suddenly spotlight's really on them, I think, a lot more than maybe we want, but that doesn't mean that they're going to fail.
Yeah, Moyer is definitely the guy I think that we're going to point to, since he's been in the system for a year. He was a very highly touted recruit. He not really a similar player to Thompson, but he's going to probably fill like the same role generally. I don't think he's quite as like a low post guy. I think he's probably a little more of a slasher, a natural wing, but he's probably still going to place him at the four just because that's what the roster right now dictates. So we'll see what happens. I mean, it's disappointing. I was very bullish on Torian. I thought he would have a very nice year, but there's nothing saying that he, you know, would have had a star turn or that, you know, oh, he was garbage anyway, which I'm sure if you go into certain corners of the internet, I'm sure we're getting, like, launch screeds on how bad his defense actually was.
You can go into our corner of the internet and you'll find that.
There, fair enough.
Not from me, but it's there.
I have no doubts. So, yeah, I mean, there's nothing also to say that Matt Moyer won't be, like, a really good player as a redshirt freshman. And I do think, I was talking to someone about this yesterday, I do think the best thing that we could hope for with our program right now is to get some of this, like, momentum back and get the fans calmed down. If we wanted to land another player for 2018, that'd be nice. I think with Baisley coming in and being one of our highest-rated recruits in a long time, if Syracuse puts together like a recruiting class we have missed for like the last 2 or 3 years, I think that will quell a lot of nerves. And then, you know, this is also not to say that we can't go and have a surprising year next year. It's not like Syracuse hasn't done that myriad times when people didn't think very much of the team. Just because last year there were questions about the team and it fell short doesn't mean that'll happen necessarily again. So I'm not ready to like jump off the roof or anything. It's definitely disappointing, and I'm definitely a little more pessimistic than I was, but I want to see this team play first before I decide that like the roof is caving in and we need to start making these giant swings to figure out what to do in the future.
Yeah, and you know what, like going into last season, I mean, a couple games in, it seemed like, you know, this was a freight train that wasn't stopping anywhere. It seemed like, you know, we had Gillen and in particular White, we're in the flow right away. The team seemed like it was led by, you know, some youth, but a lot of veterans, guys like Lydon who've been in the system. Like last year, a couple games in, we were thinking like, this is going to be a tournament team. We're headed right back to the same heights we reached the season before. And like, look how that year turned out. in the early going, we didn't necessarily see the defensive struggles, the struggles really getting, you know, White and Gillen assimilated into the zone, getting Battle assimilated into the zone a little bit and into the offense. Like, I'm not going to worry about that yet. I think that, again, like, we have a lot of young pieces. We have guys who can take strides. Like, I think Tyus Battle, based on play last year and based on how much exposure he got, I feel like he was more likely than Thompson to be able to blow up a little bit this season. So I'm still really excited to see what he brings to the table. I'm still really excited to see what Geno Thorpe, the USF transfer, brings to the table. Like, I know there's a lot of folks who were very anti-transfer all year last year, despite the fact that Andrew White led us in scoring. You know, Thorpe has the chance to do something similar for Syracuse this year. We'll see on the defensive end, but, you know, I don't think White was a huge defensive stopper either. But, you know, we'll see. We really don't know, you know, how these kids are going to gel together, how they're going to gel together within the system. There's just so many assumptions, and I'm going to wait this one out. Obviously, I'm going to weigh in a little bit going into the season. We do have a tough non-conference schedule and a tough scheduling conference as always, but I'm not selling the season up the river just because, you know, one rising sophomore left when we do have, I think, you know, the beginnings of more depth than we've had in a couple of years.
Yeah, we are. The one thing is we are, like, working our scholarship numbers back into form, and that should portend to things down the road, even if this year we're still, like, a little bit lean at the top of the roster. Generally, like, we're going to bring in some big classes, hopefully. I'm fine going in on the transfer market because other teams are not going to stop doing it. So obviously you could be worried about how guys in their first year, like Thorpe, like White last year, Gillen obviously was probably slightly outside of the box of what we usually get for guards, whether or not they're transfers. But you could worry about how they fit into the zone right away. But as long as other teams are going to sit here and pick off top players from other programs, from smaller programs largely, I'm not going to say that Syracuse should just not do that and roll the dice with, you know, just the normal 2008 rules of play here. If there's a good player that wants to come to Syracuse and he's a junior, I'm going to work under the assumption that he can figure out how to play passable zone defense. So I don't think that was the problem. I don't think the team was, and this is so stupid that we're even discussing this, I don't think the team was worse last year for having Andrew White on it.
No, I would completely agree. And yet, like, you know, even if this year is a little bit of some treading water, like, I mean, God forbid we don't make the tournament again, that really wouldn't be ideal. But assuming we come close, I don't think it's really going to impact the guys that we're already, you know, high on, and they're high on us. Like, we've already got Elijah Hughes in from ECU, and he'll sit this year and then play next year. Assuming Darius Baisley ends up on campus, that's a huge recruit for us. The Ohio State flip, you know, after Thad Model left. We're targeting Jalen Carey. We have, you know, Buddy Boeheim coming into the fold. There's potential spots.
Probably.
I mean, I would be shocked if not. Like, there's potential for some other, you know, highly regarded kids in the 2018 class. This class could really remind us a lot of, you know, I mean, hopefully with better results, but, you know, the dynasty class or some of those classes after that really came in with, you know, four or so, like, bona fide starters. I'm optimistic. I'm not going to sell this team short when there are a lot of proven pieces left, even if we did lose a significant amount of scoring.
Yep. So it's... You know, I think it's going to take a little bit for us to really figure out what this team is. Because, I mean, as we've said before, like, we've come into seasons where we didn't think much was going to happen, and we've been very pleasantly surprised. Last year, I think we were all very high on the team heading in, and obviously things did not go the way we planned. So I didn't buy my Syracuse to win the national championship ticket in Vegas this year. I did last year, so maybe that'll turn things around for us. That was like $50. Hole in my pocket that got burned through pretty quickly after I felt very good about the, like, 75-1 odds or whatever I got them at because they hadn't adjusted for White yet.
I mean, they're 100-1 right now, I think, are they? Or are they 150?
I think they're 100, but that's like just one of those generic groupings where they don't really know what to make of those teams.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I'd still take those odds. I'd put 15, 20 bucks down on that. Just for the hell of it. Alas, Moving on a little bit to football as we gradually get to game chat. Dan, you and I were talking kind of extensively in the Noon Magician Slack today about what goes on with the uniform situation and the fact that Syracuse will once again be opening up with minimal orange. At least last year they wore orange jerseys, this year not so much. And why now in year, you know, four of this set, we have for some reason just avoided orange almost entirely.
Yeah, we brought this up, like, what was it, 11 of 36 games?
Yes.
There was no orange worn whatsoever for the Syracuse orange. Like, it's just silly.
Well, it speaks to how poorly the last 4 years of uniforms have been rolled out. Like, and I mentioned this in a piece for tomorrow, which will be today for those listening. You know, going back to 2013, we started transitioning away from orange, more towards blue. We rolled out those stupid color fade Jacksonville Jaguars helmets that were just awful, and yet we wore them almost every week.
And we never got the orange jersey that, like, was clearly they were screaming for.
Right.
Like, why are you doing a color fade jersey when then you're a color fade helmet when your jersey is just the color that the helmet faded out of already?
Right. Yeah, it's that never made any sense. Then when we actually got the new set in 2014, the color fade helmet left. So again, like, I don't know why you had a color fade helmet for like six games. And then at this point we can say it, like, the stupidity of the old athletic department, like, you know, the orange elements, other than the orange helmets, were not accounted for or ordered on time. So therefore, there were no orange jerseys or orange pants available for the entirety of the 2014 season.
And they were on the ship.
Yeah, they were on a ship. That's why we went 3-9. Somehow that ship took a full year to get there.
I want the oral history of that ship.
That was
some like Christopher Columbus like length sailing from I'm guessing Asia somewhere, like, to get to Syracuse, New York. Like, were they taken on horse and buggy across the United States?
Had to have been. I can't wait to write the book one day of just all the stories and all the info from the Gross era. I already have the working title of Gross Incompetence, How Syracuse Lost Its Soul from 2004 to, you know, 2013. That'll be a fun book to write once I get around to it.
Yeah, the thing that annoyed me, like, most was that when those jerseys dropped, like, obviously the jerseys that we have some issues. There are parts of them that look very stupid. But there were some interesting combinations. I remember putting together a really stupid thing in Microsoft Paint with, like, all the different potential combinations. And we didn't even touch on, like, how many orange jersey combos have we worn? Like,
I think, like, one.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Like, why, if you're going to do this and you're going to have all these helmets and all these pants and all these jerseys, either, you know, mix and match and find some that work, or just do a new one every week and figure it out. But, like, they just, like, went halfway. They found, like, the ugliest possible ones to repeat. They ride, like, all, like, two blues, but they ride, like, blue helmets and jerseys, or blue jerseys and pants, and then it throws off, like, any kind of symmetry or just anything interesting you could do with the combos that we have. And then, you know, occasionally you have a really cool-looking one. I think we've worn, like, orange helmet, white jersey, orange pants, like, once, maybe twice, and that's, like, one of the better ones we have available. So it's just, like, it's super frustrating. Like, there were some decent jersey combos. I think, like, blue-orange-blue is a pretty decent look. I think maybe we've worn that one once. So, like,
we've had it, like, once or twice. Orange-blue-orange is the classic look, and I wish we would just, like, use that as the primary.
Yeah, and if that was the base and we wore that two or three times a year, that'd be great. We've worn that, like, I think we wore that the first couple times, and maybe we've worn it, like, once or twice since. So it's there are good looks in there, or at least, you know, the best possible looks, and they're just underutilized. But instead we get blue, blue, orange, or what was the really ridiculous one?
There was the
blue, blue, white.
Blue, blue, white is the worst because they also paired it with a white face mask.
Oh, God, that was so bad.
I'm looking at it now because I have, like, the SU issue of Athlon sitting on my table. And on the front is Eric Dungy from the Notre Dame game in the blue, blue, white nonsense. I do like the all-white, like, Stormtrooper look. I know that not everyone does. I'm fine with that one as a road look. We were actually – it's one of the only looks that we have, like, a 500 or so record in somehow. I think one of the other, I mean, the other problem is, like, you know, you look at all these nationally televised games, like, we pick, like, the dumbest looks for them. Like, the Clemson game, we've typically gone, like, mostly blue. The Notre Dame game a couple of years ago, we went with platinum. We obviously wore platinum, at least with orange helmets, against Virginia Tech last year. But now, you know, anytime you want to talk about Syracuse or visualize Syracuse in the last couple of years, if you're a non-fan, the platinum uniforms now come to mind as one of the first, you know, images in your head. There's a lot of puzzling decisions. I know Dino Babers late today hinted at, you know, new uniforms inbound. I don't know if that's going to be a full season drop or just like a one-off game or a special edition. I don't know. But whatever it is, I just hope, A, like, the focal point is orange-ish, and B, like, it veers away from this uniform set, because I at this point, I can't stand it. And I think a lot of it is because, like you said, it was so underutilized. It's not necessarily that the elements were bad on their own. It's just, you look at Arizona State and other schools like that have these interchangeable pieces, and we have that too. And yet we're the only school that just has no idea how to put them in place.
Yeah, like, I know you have, like, your issues with Oregon. At least Oregon has a strategy with their uniforms.
Oh, of course.
Like, some of them suck, and some of them are kind of cool, and, like, a lot of it's, like, you either like them or you hate them. But Oregon is very good about knowing exactly what they're going to do. They have a new jersey every game. They model them. They have a new website for every jersey for every game. They roll them out at this pretty much the same time every week. You know exactly what you're getting. Syracuse uses either, like, a brand new look or goes back to a bad old look, and you don't know when they're going to do what.
They don't tell you when they're going to announce it. I also mentioned in the post today, like, they announced today is from the Q's football recruiting feed.
Yeah, which is announced at the same place every time. Like, right, like, roll it out on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook on the same accounts every week at the same time.
Yeah, the Q's football feed every Wednesday or Thursday, that's fine. Like, pick the day. Like, I remember one season it was the equipment manager feed. Last year, like, Dino tweeted it twice, and then, like, it was on the Q's football feed another five times, then it was somewhere else. Like, just be consistent.
It's like a damn scavenger hunt.
Like, right. Like, people want to talk about your program. People want to know about your program. Just share the information. It's not that hard. But, yeah, like, you know, Oregon to me is, like, the far extreme, and while I don't need a different jersey every week or a different website for it, I don't even need it more than, like, a week in advance. But, like, I mean, a lot of schools now are doing the advance notice and getting people excited. Like I said, I mentioned Arizona State as kind of a prime example that they have something similar to us. They have, you know, four different colors. They have yellow, the maroon, the black, and the white. And they interchange those looks and they announce them right at the beginning of the season. And they use all of them. You know, they'll have a blackout, they'll have a whiteout. Like, they'll create something around the games. For us, it's just the uniforms are just like, I feel like it's an unnecessary, just to us, it feels like an unnecessary part of the brand experience when it should be an essential part of it.
Yeah, it's like it's a chore for them to figure out what to do with them. And even the parts that we don't like the platinum gray ugly ones that we have, which we've worn just the one time, right? Just the Notre Dame game?
Well, then we wore them last year.
When did we wear them last year?
The Vatek game.
Oh, yeah, so maybe we should wear this down. But, like, if there's a decent look with those, it's with the orange helmets and orange pants, so that the dull gray jersey is, like, has other stuff popping off of it, even though the dull gray jersey should have orange numbers, and that's the main problem with it, even if apart from the fact that gray's not one of our colors. But we haven't even done that. We wear them with blues so that everything's dull, so we just look like a weird create a team from NCAA 2008. Yeah, it's just frustrating, as you can tell from John and my voice, because there is potential, and we have a good color scheme, and we have a signature color that we are named after, and can't seem to focus on that, which it's like branding, I get it can be hard in some ways, like branding Syracuse as the orange and then wearing orange is not a difficult thing to wrap your head around.
You can trip and fall into success there. Like, if we're going to have this much trouble with a complex uniform set, I would almost rather go back to the maroon era, where there was no variation. You either had the blues or you had the whites, and that was it. Like, and I really enjoyed that uniform set. I thought it was a nice compromise with modernizing the old school McNabb era look. I know when I polled the audience on Twitter today, a lot of people were big fans of the old '90s look, and I brought it up there, and I brought it up in the article about that too. While I agree it was a good look and it was an iconic look for the time, I don't think you can have a blank helmet today unless you're, you know, Army or Notre Dame. So that BC, I think that they're screwed by that quite a bit. I don't think that you can... I think that that was a very clear 90s look, but I also think that the positive association, the positive vibes that a lot of people put on those uniforms are a product of how we played during them. And you know, maybe for me, like, the positive vibes around the Maroon jerseys are in part brought on by how we did relatively well under Maroon. Like, you know, that's how memory works. That's how emotions work, where you associate how you feel with how you, with something you saw, something you heard. So, like, I know it's tough for our fans sometimes to, like, reason with, like, how we meet in the middle between old traditions and new things that have to happen for recruiting purposes and branding purposes. But, like, we can't have those exact uniforms, and I hope everybody's okay with the fact that we're never going to.
Yeah, I mean, that's just not how things work. Like, maybe you at some point get, like, a throwback that's, like, reminiscent. Kind of like, I mean, even the 2012 jerseys, like, were the same general idea with not being exactly those. I'm fine with, like, people who are very attached to kind of that whole old scheme, but we're never going to get, like, just straight up return to 1987 jerseys.
I mean, I love the drop shadow, don't get me wrong. Like, there's a lot of fun elements, but again, it's from a bygone era. You can't roll those out anymore. And, like, anyone sitting around, and, you know, this is a product of kind of our fan base being a little bit older and just the part of the country we're in. Like, anyone sitting around going, like, we should look like Penn State, we should look like Alabama, we should look like all these other, like, very simple, streamlined teams, like, those teams can be that way because they have a tradition of success in those uniforms. Therefore, you associate it with success. Like, for us, like, we're just kind of skipping the part where we win and then, like, just saying, like, oh, well, let's just go as simple and streamlined as possible. Like, if we have a really plain jersey, Syracuse athletics is going to suffer. Syracuse football is going to suffer as a result. Like, Syracuse basketball can get away with simple jerseys. The ones they have right now are pretty simple. But because you associate those uniforms and that simple look with success, it works for them. It doesn't work for football, and we can't just rest on some you know, backwards idea that, you know, SU's tradition of success that at this point we're, you know, almost two decades removed from holds any water with recruits and is going to excuse, you know, what's going to be perceived to 18 and 19 year old kids as a lame uniform design.
Yeah, and, like, while this isn't, like, the biggest thing, obviously there are much bigger factors. Like, it is a slight recruiting advantage when you have uniforms that kids like. And, like, you can get a recruit to talk himself into, like, Penn State's uniforms or Oregon's uniforms. Like, there are pros and cons to both. But you do want to have something that is a signature look, whether it's classic or whether it's, like, outlandish and new. Syracuse has not accomplished either. Right. So... hopefully we can get to a point where something that we do works. Whether it's just having the same classic look at some point, which I don't think there's enough attached to the brand to do that, or you have, you know, a cool-looking modern uniform, which is what we tried to do and didn't quite get to. So just get something that people are happy with, and, you know, you're never going to make everyone thrilled because there will be the blue hairs who want to see the 1987 jerseys, and there will be... you know, 14-year-old kids who want to see Orange Oregon. But, like, get somewhere where everyone can be, you know, relatively proud of what they're watching.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I think, to be honest, if they just tweak, like, some of the stupid, like, numbers and some of the angling crap in the current uniforms and maybe, like, incorporate some nods to the past, I think the current uniform set can be altered in a way that suits everybody. But it does kind of seem like everyone's all or nothing on this, and that's disappointing in many ways to me, but par for the course, I suppose.
Very much so. Uniforms, they do move the needle, if nothing else. Like, you will get people talking if you bring up uniforms.
Indeed, indeed. All right. Why don't I do a little halftime, and then we will get into the Central Connecticut State game. So, Dan, what have you been drinking?
I had another pretty good drinking week. I'm trying to find where I left off from last week. So I had a pretty interesting one from Blue Point, their Beach Plum Goza, which was pretty good. Like, I didn't know really what to expect from Beach Plum, and I can't tell you that it was, like, a super distinct flavor, but it was a very solid goes overall, and I'm not usually the biggest Blue Point fan all the time. I had Grimm's double dry hopped Lumen, which was absolutely delicious. Very hoppy, juicy IPA. I had Susan from Hill Farmstead. Hill Farmstead always does great work. Susan's not my favorite from them, but it's very good, and there are very few times where I'm going to go find Hill Farmstead and not have one. And then I had Week 52 from Industrial Arts, another really good effort from them. They're kind of quickly becoming one of my favorite breweries when I can find them. And then I forgot to check into one, but I had the Raspberry Sour from, I'm trying to find it now, it's from Single Cut, the Raspberry Kim, I think. I will put it on Untappd now, but it's... they do really good sour work, even though that's not like really their forte. They're more of an IPA, you know, IPA spot, but their sours are quite good. It's a Kim Red Raspberry Sour Lager, which I've had a number of times and I've mentioned on here before. But that one popped up. It's like very sour, but it's the flavor is really good, and I ride for Single Cut all the time. So she had a pretty solid week overall, I'd say.
Fair enough. I kept it pretty easy. This past weekend, just because I was up in San Francisco last week during the week, so I figured let's balance that out. A couple things I had a growler of one of Monkish's latest double IPAs, Atomically. Pretty good hop bill. I don't have it on hand, but it wasn't pretty enjoyable. I had it over the weekend. Also grabbed a Stone Ripper. They're a pretty good pale ale you can find most places around here, at least. Had Strand, which is a local Torrance brewery, their 24th Street Pale Ale. And that was really it. So, Dan, you beat me out on this week.
One in the wind column.
Yeah, I don't really think I'm going to have a ton this weekend either, to be honest. I think it's going to be a little bit lighter on the beer. I mean, I'm still going to drink beer, but it's going to be a little bit lighter on that front. Between the game on Friday and then, you know, I'll probably just end up at a random sports bar for some of the Saturday night games and all that, but we'll see. I'm optimistic about the success for this weekend on multiple fronts.
Yes, I don't think any of us will lose beer drinking. I also don't think we're going to lose football, so it works out.
Yeah. Okay. So now, Dan, we are officially in pregame mode. This is the moment everyone, especially you and I, have been waiting for. Syracuse will face Central Connecticut State on Friday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're not going to the Carrier Dome, you will be subjected to watching it on ACC Network Extra, which is just the nice way to say watch ESPN. This aspect of the ACC Network transition period is going to be really frustrating for fans because instead of getting games on regional networks like MSG or NESN or anything like that, you're just going to be subjected to online broadcasts. So the moral of the story is be better at football, I guess.
That's the easiest way to solve like most problems, is to just be better at football.
This is true.
Also, as a quick aside, I was having this discussion with two friends that work at the Worldwide Leader. I won't disclose their names. Not that I think I'm getting them in trouble or anything. But we were discussing, who will be the inevitable cast for the ACC version of College Game Day / SEC Nation?
You know what? I feel like Anish could be like a sleeper pick there.
Like as the Reese Davis,
yeah,
like formerly Chris Fowler. That'd be good.
He seems like somebody. I just hope they don't like dive all in on the ACC Network folks. All the digital network folks and like all the people that are on like the game of the week.
Oh yeah, I don't know.
Because like most of those people don't really give a shit about Syracuse.
Yeah, like the obvious one would have been Danny Cannell, but he's obviously gone. Yeah,
he's gone.
Maybe Joey Galloway.
Galloway, maybe Clinton Portis does a pretty good job on the digital network.
Yeah, I could see him coming over. He's a name.
And Jeff Fischel does a really good job on their digital stuff too. I feel like Jeff would almost definitely be like one of the main folks, but yeah, they need like a really big like non-ACC name to like grab people.
Yeah, like that's the thing. It's like there's a weird dearth of like I feel like there should be someone from like those Miami teams that's like around, and Portis I guess is one.
Yeah.
But there's no one I could really think of that isn't already doing something like pretty big.
You think they'd what about Dari?
That could work.
Because he's down in Charlotte.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me either as like the host. There are a lot of good host options because ESPN's like filthy with hosts, but I'm just wondering who the panel's gonna be.
Right.
And who's gonna be the I guess like SC Nation doesn't really have a torso. I guess Feinbaum not really. Yeah. He's just like the old guy, and I don't know if that's fair to make that the equation.
Also, like, I'm not going to really watch that anyway.
Oh, I'll probably never watch it, but we were just having a discussion. It was kind of fun to think of, because that is happening. You know they'll have one of those shows.
Well, they have to. I mean, the big problem with one of those shows, though, for the ACC versus, like, the Big Ten of the SEC is that there isn't the collectivism and there isn't, like, the atmosphere. So, like, you can't just have it at, like, FSU Clemson every week.
Are you saying you don't want to have like ACC Nation at BC hosting Wake Forest?
I mean, you and I have both been to Wake, and like that would be the most underwhelming experience.
The only way I think it would be good is if you had the like all the weird Wake mascot variations like circling it the whole time.
That'd be fair.
On the motorcycles.
NC State could actually be a good time.
Yeah, because NC State will really go get into it. Like their fans will take it as an opportunity to show that they're something.
Yeah,
like which
proving
we know
grounds.
They are.
Yeah,
it'll probably turn ground. Into a lot of signs that are just straight conspiracy theories about 100%. UNC. it'll look like you won't be quite sure if you're watching like a College Game Day variation or an InfoWars show, but. You'll be somewhere, and it'll be somewhere down between those two.
Oh God, it's like I mean, like if Pitt had it, like you'd see like mostly Steelers jerseys.
Oh, 100%.
Like almost entirely Steelers jerseys. Even us, like I don't think we'd like do that great of a job with it.
No, we started doing a decent job with basketball when game day came around after I was there, but like there were a couple times where it was pretty lean before that, apparently.
It was pretty great, the Villanova game in like 2010.
That was excellent. Yeah, we had a really big crowd for that.
2010, that was a lot of fun. But yeah, I don't necessarily know if we do football too well just because, you know, the parking issues, the traffic issues, the leaf raking issues. There's so many things that would prevent us from really showing up for that.
So many leaves.
So many leaves, so little time. Those apples aren't going to pick themselves, Dan.
Beacon Stiff is only open on Syracuse College Ball Saturdays, so it's a really weird strategy by them.
Oh, man. People are going to be so pissed about this. Anyway, so the game itself. I don't know if you noticed that thing that Brent tweeted earlier, that CCSU's quarterback... Jacob Dolagala, his grandfather, was actually on the 1959 SU team.
Yeah, I did see that today. That's super interesting. Central Connecticut, like all the Connecticut college, like lower level college teams have like weird pedigrees in terms of like turning out. Like Central especially has like a number of guys who have gone on to be NFL head coaches. Hmm. And like high level college coaches. It's a strange thing. Obviously, that's where, like, Coach P came out of the Connecticut, like, pipeline. I don't know if he was at Central at any point, but he was in Connecticut. You have just a number of people who are just from that, like, either Central or Southern or, like, University of New Haven. Like, it's a strange thing. I don't know why it happens.
Yeah, because I think, because their coach was from New Haven and then went to Central.
Is he? Yeah, and then Adazio was somewhere, and then you have, like... I'm trying to think of some like there's like three or four other like NFL / college head coaches that all coach at like lower level Connecticut schools.
Weird. Well, that is the more you know, as some would say. So yeah, I guess starting with we won't go down the roster, but Dolagala didn't do half bad last year. Completed as a sophomore 60% of his passes. 2,934 yards, 15 touchdowns, 9 picks. He's not bad. I mean, you know, he's adjust accordingly for the fact that, you know, his best game was against D2 Bowie State. You also have just the fact that, you know, the team still did pretty poorly. But yeah, despite not having like a ton of weapons around him, Dolagala seemed to do fairly well. His receivers were... reasonably okay. Joey Fields, their now senior, you know, wide receiver, caught 46 passes, 732 yards last year. Like, he's somebody that you should definitely watch out for. Like, their top four receivers are all back. The passing game was actually not too bad last year. I think it averaged like something like 260, 265, you know, yards a game. Like, it was pretty one-sided. I mean, they only, I think, ran for about 91 yards a game, but still, like, this is a team that can move the ball through the air, Dan, even if, you know, again, you have to make the necessary adjustments for opponents.
Yeah, I mean, his numbers, his passing numbers are very good, especially for, like you said, a team that struggled overall. I'd say if there is a positive, I just looked up his rushing stats, and they're not much.
Hooray!
He had 64 rushes for negative 6 yards last year. He did have 5 touchdowns, which means I'm guessing they're counting sacks as lost rushing yardage, which means he took a good amount of sacks. So he'll punch it in. He had a long of 10 yards last year. And he had 9 fumbles, which is not great. So he can be sacked. I'm assuming his offensive line wasn't very good.
Yeah.
He's not super mobile. He will punch it in from probably the 1. I'm guessing PC has a fairly large touchdown total. But it seems like a guy you can probably get after. And
you don't have to worry about putting a QB spy in at all times. Like, for yeah, some reason, like we always end up with
the Villanova dude who, like, made our lives a living hell.
Who was admittedly, like, the best player in FCS that year.
Yeah, no, he was really good. This guy is not that, and I expect him to hang in the pocket a decent amount. And hopefully, if our defensive line is as, you know, sneakily interesting as we discussed last week in the Undead podcast and
Zombie Cast.
I think there was a Syracuse.com article today about the
actually. I think people are kind of high on him. I mean, we had our defensive MVP like article, and you know, everybody, I think most of us went with Zaire Franklin, obvious choice for defensive MVP. A couple people went with Cordy, but then I think it was Michael went with the Josh Black Kendall Coleman combo.
And you're picking 2 MVPs. I like it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a ballsy move, but you know what? Like,
what, you can double your chances? Yeah, I think that's good.
Yeah, double your chances for 1, but for 2, like, admittedly, both of those players probably, like, if one of them is successful, the other one probably is 2.
Yeah, I know. I buy that for sure.
So yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna sit here and claim that we like double our sack total, but I could, and again, this is something we talked about last week, like. The makeup of this team and in the front 7, like, is definitely a little more geared toward the old style of play now, suddenly, where there's a lot of guys who have high tackle for loss numbers in the JUCO ranks. I think that, you know, Franklin's going to be allowed to kind of unload on some guys a little bit more. I think you're going to see more blitzes. Like, again, we're not going to turn into a Schaefer defense overnight, but I think this is going to be a team that understands that one of its strengths is getting after the passer suddenly, and it's going to do a little bit more of that. So maybe we see a jump from, you know, a paltry 15 sacks last year to something in the 20 to 25 range this year, which could make a big difference, especially if there's some closer games.
Yeah, it's actually funny because I think this is like the personnel here would fit like a Schaefer defense pretty well. Not a ton of size up front, but a lot of speed. A lot of linebackers. And then part of that is that it is still like the bones of a Schaefer defense that was being built. But even some of the new guys we brought in, like Alton Robinson, who was set up one of the centerpieces of this article that Steve Bailey wrote today, a lot of guys that might come off the edge and do some damage. The defensive tackle situation is still a little disconcerting. We went into it pretty at length last week based on the depth issues. So it wouldn't shock me to see a lot of teams just trying to run all over us, and that also helps to keep our offense off the field. But if we face a high passing team, like I am kind of optimistic that we might be able to do some damage coming off the edge. I think there's interesting talent there, and there are guys who have played a decent amount there. So we'll find out, and our buddy at Central will find out too. Because if he's going to hang in the pocket, then it'll be an interesting showcase, I think.
Yeah, I fully expect us to unload on him in the first game. And, you know, I'm not going to take that as any sort of, you know, a harbinger for things to come. But I think if you see this team get a little more aggressive on defense, that could be a sign of something. I mean, and we said this last week, too, like, both the scrimmages were a little more defensive focused. The spring game was very defensive focused. I don't know if it's because of familiarity or whatever, but I think this defense is going to not necessarily surprise people, but it's going to improve at a rate that definitely helps us out. But speaking of defenses, figured while we were here, I would mention the fact that Central Connecticut State's defense is bad. Very bad.
It's really, really bad.
like allowed 150 yards a game on the ground bad, and 250 yards per passing per game bad. So I'm fully, and I mentioned this in the predictions article that'll go up after this. I think Dungy's just gonna let it loose. And I mean, you know, Babers isn't really gonna pull out a lot of the complicated plays, and I don't think we're gonna try to do like a ton of things that we wouldn't try out in practice. But I think based on how bad the secondary was and how bad they were getting after the quarterback, I feel like Dungy's gonna be able to do whatever the hell he wants.
It seems that way based on the numbers. Now, obviously, I think they return a lot of their starters, so maybe those dice take a step forward. I'm looking at the article that Syracuse.com put up today. They have 18 returning starters in total.
That's a lot.
So we always talk about this with Syracuse. Like, sometimes that means, you know, guys will take a step forward. Sometimes that means, oh, you brought back a lot of the starters that were really bad last year. Congrats. It's obviously, not either of us are experts on Central, so it's hard to tell which that'll be. But I don't think it really matters. I think Dungy will have his way. I think one of our goals for this game should be having Dungy out of the game by the second drive of the third quarter.
Yeah, I buy that. I don't see this game like I think last year we were all a little bit frustrated. I think we were only up like what, 21-7 at half last
year.
Something
like that. Yeah. It was like just close enough where you left him in. I think hopefully we have this one in bed. I think you put Dungy out there to start the third quarter. You score a touchdown. Hopefully it's like a four touchdown game at that point, and then you put in Mahoney and let him do his thing.
Yeah, I'm fully okay with like just taking the brakes off at the beginning and just seeing how fast you can go and how much you can score, and let's see how quickly we can get those starters off the field, because and this is something we talked about last week when we were going game by game, like Middle Tennessee is going to run. Middle Tennessee is going to test us, especially on the defensive end. The fresher we can be, even we already get the extra day's rest, but the fresher we can be against the Blue Raiders, the better. Again, we should be okay with pace because we practice against it, but this needs to be, like, we need to be locked in on both sides of the ball. We need to be, you know, ready to run with them, or else that game could be a lot closer than we want it. The closer that game is, and the longer that MTSU can hang around, the more frightened I am about Scott Schaefer's familiarity with SU.
Yeah, I the nice thing about our offense, I think, is it's not one that you're too worried about like burning stuff that people you don't want people to see. Like our play structure is like fairly simple. It's a lot of variations off of the same base like looks. So I think we can go in, we can run the stuff we want to run, we can hopefully put some points on the board without too much of an issue, and then we can get out of there and get some depth dice, some looks. And that would also be great, because like we want to keep on building up guys along the offensive line, since we had so many injury issues there last year. Getting like the second string linemen some looks would be great. Seeing who we have along both the defensive line and at the cornerback spot, which we've talked about, we have a lot of bodies there. We're just not quite sure who the right bodies are yet. Would be great. I'm very glad we have a hopefully less stressful FCS game. And obviously, we don't want to just count it as a win yet, because we've seen how these go. Not that we've lost one, but we've seen very frustrating ones like every other year, it feels like. But this one should be among the easier ones that we've had, and I want to see as many guys that are not redshirting play as possible, because I think this depth chart is still really feeling itself out.
Yeah, I agree. I think a lot of the guys you saw on the second line, like Nakam Johnson, Sherrod Johnson, obviously, I really want to see what Aaron Servais can do in his first action. Sam Heckel, like, you know, because you mentioned the line. Like, these are all guys that we really need to get some burn for. I think Babers is conscious of that and would love, based on the schedule, like, if you're going to get these guys minutes, now's the time. And if you're going to burn the shirt anyway, might as well, you know, get them on the field and contributing in a real game action in the second half of this one against CCSU. And like you said, it's not to get ahead of ourselves, it's not to make assumptions here, but I do like our odds to put a lot of these kids in. and really really get a better feel for what's on this roster and how they're able to function in their first year operating here. Obviously, we already know what we're getting with a lot of these, you know, second year guys in Baber's scheme. So it'd be nice to get something quantifiable from some of the other guys too.
Yeah, and I have to like to amend something I said. I'm sure we'll see some Mahoney if things go well. I would also like to see some Rex Culpepper.
I'd be cool with like somebody mentioned in the comments like to put in what's his name? Clayton Welch.
Yes. I mean just at all the quarterbacks. I mean, I'm forgetting. We haven't had that rule amendment yet with how many games you can play before just automatically getting the injury redshirt, right?
Correct.
Okay, so that's still like in the works.
Yeah, so that'll probably be if it gets enacted, it'll probably be for 2018.
Okay, cool. Because then I was gonna say I was pretty sure that was the case.
Because it would be
obvious. Yeah, Tommy DeVito, and I'm still interested to see. Like, I would not be shocked if Tommy DeVito played and Baber's like, we're just gonna see what we got.
But it's just
I don't think I'm supporting it. I just wouldn't be shocked
because you know this fan base.
Oh, I know the fan base. Because the second Tommy DeVito, like say Dungy's stat line's like fine, and then Tommy DeVito goes 7-for-8 for 135 yards and 2 touchdowns.
Right. Against like a demoralized Central Michigan.
Against the second string Central Connecticut Blue Devils. Wouldn't I see like, not only should DeVito start, but he should also...
be the head coach.
He should actually not play college football next year so that he can go to the NFL.
Yeah, he should sit the next 2 years and...
We're just gonna have some like crazy like infight like fighting within the brains of Syracuse fans about
God, make it stop.
He should win the Heisman and then go play in Canada for 2 years,
right?
And then come back to Syracuse somehow for his senior year, and then go to the NFL.
Oh God! All right. On that note, Dan, your final score prediction for this one?
I'll go Syracuse 49, Central 3.
All right, I am going Syracuse 45. I'm going Central 10. I think that touchdown comes in garbage time, the waning minutes. So I think this game ends at half.
That's fair. I probably should give them a touchdown, but I don't want to. So I'm going to stick with 3.
I don't blame you there. All right. So Dan, I think we can wrap up here. I feel like there's going to be plenty of longer, more involved podcasts during the season, so we might as well not burn ourselves out right away.
We also did like an hour of 20 and then both had mental breakdowns last week, so...
That's true. that was the thing that happened. I am also, I don't know when, either Thursday afternoon or Friday, I am doing a Facebook Live thing to preview this game as well. So I want to save some of the nuggets of intrigue for that. So folks, bring your questions. I'll announce that on social media too. So there'll be much more warning than just this podcast throwaway that half of you won't even hear. But yeah, Dan, thank you for joining as always. Much obliged.
Yes. Shout out to new editor, Lewis.
Thank you, Lewis, who's making this podcast the quality you guys have been clamoring for years and we didn't feel you deserved until recently.
Yes, the podcast quality they've been clamoring for, which is like B-.
On that note, that was Dan. I'm John. Thank you, everyone, for listening to Troy Noon's An Absolute Podcast. You can rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, on Blog Talk, on whatever other service you listen to, and go Orange.
Go Orange.